Well, do you think you have things figured out if your better half passes first? Well, think again. Today we're going to dive deep into what really happens, and spoiler, it's not always what you'd expect. So from joint accounts to sneaky state laws, we're chatting about the big surprises and little-known loopholes that could throw a wrench into your plans.
This is New York's Asset Protection Roundtable with Ted Alatsis of Alatsis Law Firm. Our mission at Alatsis Law Firm is to assist you with the three pillars of protection: preserving your assets, providing you help, and protecting your future.
Welcome back into New York's Asset Protection Roundtable, a three pillars of protection program. I'm Ben George. He's Ted Alatsis, attorney and counselor at law at the Alatsis Law Firm in Brooklyn, New York. You can find everything online at alatsislawfirm.com. Ted, it's good to talk to you again. What's going on with you?
It's great to talk to you too, Ben. Things are good, and we're in the dog days of winter now, and waiting to get to spring, right? I mean, that's kind of what we're doing.
Yeah, no question about it. I actually just started a documentary on Yogi Bear. I don't know if you were a big fan of his back in the day, but there's one on Netflix that so far so good.
Yes, I've seen it. Yes, it's an excellent documentary, and big Yogi Berra fan. So
it's interesting how he was overlooked for baseball because of all of his quips and quotes. But I'm looking forward to kind of getting through that. But it reminds me that baseball season's right around the corner. Mm-hmm. And like you said, spring, we're all excited for that to begin.
That's right.
We have a good show today. And as we go through this, and if you have any questions, maybe this hopefully will generate a few things that you want to think about and kind of get answers to, or maybe get some clarity on. You can always get in touch with Ted at 718-233-2903 or online at alatsislawfirm.com. As I mentioned, you can schedule an appointment right there through the website as well. But today we're talking about what happens when the first spouse dies. So, you know, when someone passes away, the what happens next, it's usually dictated by the decedent's estate plan, if they had one, of course, and in that case, maybe by state law, if there was no plan. But there are some special circumstances we want to talk through that apply when a married person passes away, but their spouse is still alive. So I want to kind of go through these with you, Ted, and I want to kind of talk through some assets first and kind of the way these are set up, and then maybe some special circumstances a little bit later on, and maybe some areas where there might be a false sense of security as well. So as we begin, I know a lot of assets or a number of assets have joint ownership. So in this case, let's talk about what happens with the assets if they are under joint ownership.
Sure. And this is the most common scenario for couples when they're married. And that is that the majority of the things they have are held jointly with joint ownership. And generally that implies some form of survivorship rights. And what that essentially means is that when one passes away, the other gets everything automatically without need to do anything else. So, you know, typically you'll see this with a house or bank accounts, checking accounts, things like that, savings accounts, that sort of thing, maybe a car. That's an easy way to think about some estate planning that, a husband and wife can do together to avoid the entanglements of probate.
So explain survivorship rights to me. What is that, and why wouldn't someone have that?
So there are different ways that people can hold title to assets, and especially with regards to real estate. And that's, tenants in common, joint tenants with rights of survivorship, or what we call tenants by the entirety, which is as husband and wife. The joint tenants with rights of survivorship and tenants by the entirety are similar in that they both contain that survivorship element. What that essentially means is that when, it's husband and wife and the husband passes away, the wife is automatically the owner of whatever asset is titled that way. So if it's a house, they own a home, they've lived in it their entire lives, husband passed away, wife doesn't have to do anything other than present the death certificate when it's time to sell, if she decides to sell. But she owns it outright without the need for anything else to happen. When people have something in title that's tenants in common, you typically see that in scenarios where the parties are either not married or, you know, it's maybe siblings or something like that. And what that essentially means is that depending on how many people are entitled that way, that's how many percentage shares each person has. So if it's brother and a sister as tenants in common, that means brother has one half, sister has one half. And when brother dies, his estate is the owner of that share and not the sister automatically. And the sister, same thing. So it creates separate interests that don't continue when the person dies.
Okay, good to know. So joint ownership, most common setup for a lot of assets within a couple. What about if one is on a beneficiary designation? I know this is probably maybe second most common you'll find is people listed as beneficiaries.
Yeah, absolutely. And you typically see this in bank accounts, you know, mutual funds, stock accounts, things like that, or maybe an IRA. In New York, you can't do a beneficiary designation on real property. But what it essentially means is that the account holder, let's say it's mom, when mom passes away, who she's named as her beneficiaries would be able to receive the funds in that account with simply by presenting a death certificate. So that does not require a will. It goes beyond the scope of a will. So if mom had a will that said that that bank account was going to go to, you know, some friends, those friends would not get that account because she had a beneficiary. The beneficiary designation trumps what the will says.
All right. Very good. All right. Continuing on, determining kind of what happens with different types of assets. What if there is the default beneficiary designation? How is that one different, and where would you typically find this?
So you typically see that in the context of pensions and pension beneficiaries. And, you know, oftentimes what will happen if someone wants to not have a spouse as the beneficiary, they'd have to get the spouse's consent to choose somebody else. So there are certain circumstances, but that's typically the scenario you see it in, is that retirement context, specifically with regards to pensions.
All right. Of course, you have the estate plan under the decedent, and this one's pretty straightforward, right? If an asset falls under the estate plan, then it just follows the terms of the estate plan, right?
That's exactly right. And whether it's a trust or a will, certainly that'll determine, you know, how quickly it all gets resolved. But certainly, you know, when there's a specific designation of a beneficiary in either a trust or a will, that person would be the recipient of the assets in that specific form.
All right. One more category then. So let's just say it happens to pass by state law. How often is the spouse protected here versus other members of the family if someone passes away and the spouse is left behind?
So in New York, it really depends on how much is in the estate and what the constitution of the family is, right? So if a person passes away and they leave a surviving spouse and children, the way that would work is that the spouse would receive the first $50,000 of whatever estate there is, and then the remainder of the estate, she would receive one half of that. And then the children would receive the remaining portion in equal shares. So when someone dies and they don't have any designations and they don't have an estate plan and they don't have a will and they don't have a trust and they don't have anything, you know, set up, then, you know, the state of New York has already come up with a rule book for you. And that is what we call the intestate succession laws. And depending on your relationship in that family tree, that's going to determine what your share is.
All right. So that's kind of a look at how most assets will be structured and how things will get passed. Are there any special circumstances to be considered, whether they're just in general or specific to the state of New York with the death of a spouse?
Well, there are circumstances you want to be very careful that, you know, very specific that you set forth, especially with regards to real property. Which of the options for holding title in many names is selected, right? So you want to be clear that it's joint tenants with rights of survivorship, that that's your intention, so that there's that survivorship interest. Or if you're married, you might want to say either as husband and wife or as, you know, joint tenants or as tenants by the entirety, so that it's clear that that survivorship interest is there. Because if it's not, then it's presumed to be that tenants in common scenario, which essentially means that it's split in individual shares. So you want to be very clear that that's the case when it comes to, you know, real estate and real property. So that's the most important thing. You know, in New York, there's really no requirement that there be, you know, joint title on vehicles, right? So there's vehicles have a very peculiar set of circumstances that, you know, relate to those. But there's things you can do to address that, you know, when a person passes away.
All right. Well, let's close it out then. I know, you know, most people listening, or if you have a spouse, you just kind of assume that, well, you'll be taken care of. But obviously there can be a false sense of security in many different aspects. And right, that's why you do the estate planning and you work this process to make sure that all your wishes are granted. But you can't always take things for granted if you haven't sat down and gone through the process. So what are some things maybe just to keep in mind for someone that thinks, oh, well, you know, hey, it's just me and my spouse or whatever, and I, you know, everything should be taken care of. I don't have to worry about it too much.
Right. So, I mean, it doesn't take into consideration when you plan that way, you don't take into consideration a lot of things that could come up that you don't think about. Right. So, for example, if, you know, the surviving spouse is incapacitated or has issues, then, you know, they're limited as to what they can do with those assets. They can't protect them. There's, you know, certain things that they can't do with that. And then making sure that who you want the ultimate beneficiaries to be of your estate may not necessarily occur. So that's certainly an issue. You have to worry about making sure that, you know, who you want to get what you want when you're gone happens, right? Who you want to get that, they get it, right? So you want to make sure that you can plan that accordingly. And sometimes you leave it to chance when you do that, and you set it up so that the surviving spouse is the one making those decisions. And maybe that's not what you necessarily wanted to do, or hey, you know, the surviving spouse can be manipulated you know, once you're gone, and so something you've built up an entire lifetime to ensure for you and your family and your kids and grandkids can be taken away from you. So there's lots of different predators out there that can take away from your estate when you're gone if you're not careful. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, you really should be a little bit more proactive in terms of planning accordingly. And we've talked about this before, you know, certainly trusts are, you know, a good way of protecting those assets, but there may be other things that we can do as well.
All right. Very good information. And Ted, I'm just curious for newly married couples, I know we often think about estate planning as something that we really need to kick into gear when we have children, but how many couples come to you after getting married and really are prudent about taking care of this stuff?
So I would say it's rare.
Really?
you do run into some scenarios where people are very proactive, and those are the types of people who are proactive just generally. So especially if they've had a certain level of success, financial success in their life at an early stage. And so they may be more inclined to address those issues before there are children in place. But we generally find that that first child is the marker that starts the likelihood of someone coming in for estate planning. Mm-hmm. whether it's the first child or whether they've had assets from before they were married that they want to make sure go to other family members or something like that. That's really the circumstance that we tend to see when people are doing estate planning very early in their lives.
Very good. Well, hopefully this gives you some things to think about and maybe take that next step towards getting an estate plan in place, even if you don't have children yet. But again, you can learn a lot more by logging on to latsislawfirm.com. You can get access to their free guides, learn more about Ted, but also schedule a consultation, sit down and begin talking through some of your scenarios, your issues, your assets, what means most to you and what do you want to protect. And you can always do that again by logging on to latsislawfirm.com. Ted, always a pleasure catching up with you. Hope you're doing well, and we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely, Ben. Hope to talk to you soon.
Information is for illustrative purposes only and does not constitute tax, investment, or legal advice. Always consult with a qualified investment, legal, or tax professional before taking any action.